take the point, 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 take the point. Hello, everybody. Well, I've already lost it. I've lost my composure. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the How Does That Guy Have a Job podcast, the show where we talk about Butch Jones's career and legacy. No, that's not right either. Welcome to Take the Points, the Take the Points College Football podcast. We are about to break down the Week 5 lines, which is very exciting. And then later on, we have an epic breakdown of our greatest teams of our lifetime bracket between 2004 USC, the Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Lendale White team that was just one of the all-time greats, and the first ever playoff winner, the 2014 Ohio State team with Cardale Jones, JT Barrett, Ezekiel Elliott. That's going to be quite a matchup. My name is Tom Zalesnok, and I am here via Skype with Ryan Spillett. Hey, Ryan, what's going on?
Hey, Tom. Good to see you, man.
So our amazing co-host and Vegas outsider, Dan Partridge, had some kind of work situation and wasn't able to join us. We will try to honor his legacy by breaking down these games as best we can. We are going to skip the Week 4 recap, something we normally start the show with. Even though it was an amazing week of games, I think there's been so much coverage of Penn State, Iowa, Alabama's impressive win, the Oklahoma State loss, all that stuff. I think it's all been said on other shows, and I want to just save our time for our awesome greatest teams of our lifetime bracket later. So we're going to start this show. We're going big right from the start. We are going to talk about the big game of the week, Clemson at Virginia Tech, 8 p.m. Eastern time this Saturday. Clemson is a 7-point favorite, and we're recording on Tuesday night. I was not able to find an over-under, Ryan, but maybe you know.
Oh, I got one for you, and it's pretty low for college. It's 51.5.
Okay, that sounds about right. So we've got the Clemson D, which just looks amazing. They won our Tim Allen Award last week for being real men. The offense is looking good. Kelly Bryant's been playing well for a freshman. They look like, if not the best team in the country, then a very close second, a 1A, 1B situation with Alabama. Va Tech, on the other hand, you love them. I love them. We've been betting them every week. But they haven't really been challenged since West Virginia in week one. They've been playing these cupcake or mediocre teams, and we've been getting favorable point spreads. So we've talked about them a lot, but they haven't really played big-time competition in a while. So what do you think of this game? What should we watch for?
Well, for me, Tom, this game really is going to come down to this is really the breakout moment of the Justin Fuente era for Va Tech. You know, let's see what this offensive guru can do against the most dominant defense in college football. We can argue who's 1A, 1B as a team, but there is no arguing the best defense in the country. It is clearly Clemson. So for me, I think this is a game that normally I would definitely take points here. I just, even on the road, Blacksburg at night, God, that's scary. That's like LSU territory, scary night game. But I'm going to have to go ahead and lay it and take Clemson and the under. So this is a nice little hook situation here. I think this is a really good play to get a hook.
Sure. So this is a very tough one for me. Virginia Tech, even though I've been watching their games and betting them, we don't have a good enough sample size to really feel confident picking either way. Whereas Clemson, if you had shown me this game in this line 2 weeks ago or 2.5 weeks ago, I would have taken the points and thought this rising Virginia Tech team with Fuente, they can keep it close with Clemson, especially at home at night. And I keep thinking that Kelly Bryant as a freshman has to struggle at some point, especially with a tough road game. But we saw what happened with Louisville a couple weeks ago, and now my whole world's been flipped upside down, not just with Clemson, but just in general. This is one thing I texted you guys about, but we might as well talk about it here. I think there used to be a time, and even a few years ago, but certainly when we were growing up, that freshman quarterbacks struggled. They played like freshmen. And even if they were great, at some point they were going to have a tough game. Even a guy like Jameis Winston, who went undefeated and won a national championship game, he struggled at times. He had turnovers. Now you see freshmen come in right away, and with the training, the camps, the strength training, the weightlifting, the mental sort of preparation they go through, these guys are playing like they're seniors from the first game ever. And I just don't know what to think anymore. All logic says that Kelly Bryant should finally struggle in this game, but when I watched him a couple weeks ago and in other Clemson games, I wouldn't be willing to bet on it. And so the numbers are one thing, and the sort of traditional pick where you would take the home underdog and the points is one thing. But in this new modern era, I don't know what to make of anything except that Clemson looks amazing. They look like one of the two best, if not the best team in college football. And I'm not putting any money against them. I think we have a rule on this podcast: don't bet against Alabama. I think until further notice, I'm going to have to put a rule in: don't bet against Dabo Swinney and Clemson. So I will either stay away or do a small wager on Clemson. And I'm doing that out of fear and not out of any sort of rational thought. So make of that what you will.
All right. I like it, Tom. I think we're both kind of on Clemson here.
So I think it's a small wager on Clemson is the play, but can't wait to watch this game. This is in a week of some okay games, some pretty good games. This is the one marquee game. And so I'm excited.
Yep. It's going to be a good one.
Let's roll through the rest of the ACC now. I'll name off the games. You tell me what you think. We have Miami at Duke. Miami is a 7.5-point favorite. North Carolina travels to Georgia Tech, where Georgia Tech is a 10-point favorite. Our beloved Syracuse Orange have to go to NC State, hot off their big upset win against Florida State. NC State is now a 13-point favorite against the Cuse. And then the 0-2 Florida State Seminoles go to the powerhouse Wake Forest. Wake is getting 7.5 in that game. So is there anything you like?
Tom, I don't know what I like, but there's games I want to watch that I want to keep an eye on just to learn a little bit more about these teams. I want to watch Florida State Wake. Tom, you've been on the Wake bandwagon for about 2 years now, and it's about time I kind of get on there a little bit more and dig into that. And I want to see Florida State's new quarterback and see what he's all about and see, you know, what they look like as a team. More confidence-wise, I need to see that. More than results. I just need to see the way they carry themselves. And then the other game I'm interested in, so I'm going to stay away betting on that, but I'm interested to see it for future bets. That's going to be a huge research game for me. But the game that I like the most is Duke. I think Duke is really playing well. They're home on a Friday night. They've played four games. They're 4-0. Miami's only played two with all the weather and the hurricane issues. Miami's getting too many points on the road. They haven't proven themselves to me yet. Whereas Duke has proven that they can hang and they can play. So I actually really like Duke in this spot.
All right. So for me, I'm just going to throw out sort of a blanket rule here. The ACC, when you set aside Clemson, is the king of the mediocre schools this year. All of these teams I just named pretty much fit in there. So Miami, not enough sample size. Duke, solidly mediocre. UNC, Georgia Tech. Those are two teams that have their moments and also struggle. The Cuse, I mean, the Cuse is the Cuse. NC State looked good. I am very proud because I called before the season in our season preview that NC State would beat one of the big three this year, and we did not have to wait long for that to come true.
We didn't.
So I'm very proud of myself, even though the rest of last week my choices were a disaster. I got that.
We all crashed and burned, Tom.
That's right.
We all did.
So Florida State, they look bad, and I have to say Wake looks solidly mediocre, and I like Wake a lot this year. I'm going to take the points with Wake. And, you know, if I have to just pick, we have a bunch of teams that all are somewhere between slightly less than average and slightly better than average. Give me the points in all of these games, all of them.
I like it. I like it.
All right, let's talk SEC. We'll save Georgia for the end. New Mexico State at Arkansas, Arkansas minus 17. Vandy, your team, your boys in Vandy, they were doing so well till last week. Now they go to Florida where they're getting 10. Mississippi State, another team that was doing so well until last week, they go to Auburn. No line on that game because of uncertainty.
Well, I have a line.
You have a line?
I have Auburn at 9.
Yeah, there's some uncertainty about Mississippi State and some injury issues, I think. Troy at LSU, LSU minus 20.5. South Carolina at A&M, South Carolina a 9.5-point favorite. Do I have that wrong? Is A&M the favorite in that?
A&M is 9.5-point favorite, yeah.
Yeah, okay, I thought I wrote that down wrong. And then Ole Miss at Alabama, where Alabama's a 4-touchdown favorite. So save Georgia, Tennessee for the end, but those games, any thoughts?
It's too many points for A&M. I mean, they're home. It's an afternoon game, or it's a night game for them, actually. Right? Yeah, like 5:30 or something like that.
Yeah, South Carolina, without Debo Samuel, they're not the same team. I don't think you can bet on or trust them, but I don't trust A&M at all.
I don't trust A&M to cover that many points. Over a touchdown, that's tough.
So that's keep an a complete eye on that line. Stay away. Complete stay
yeah,
away.
Yeah, yeah, but keep an eye on that line. If that starts getting and creeps into double digits, you might be able to get a spot there. Again, same thing, Auburn. I think that's too many points for them to get. I know Mississippi State had some problems last week. I know there's still injury concerns and issues and all that, but I mean, I still think that's too many points for these two teams. I think they're a little bit more evenly matched than 9. I think I would have set this line more at like 4.5, maybe. I don't think I'd even go 6 with this line. So for me, I'd take the points with Mississippi State. I still like them. I still think Dan Mullen's a good coach. They'll figure that out. Nothing else really interests me this week. Alabama, absolutely take Alabama. Ole Miss collapsed in that second half, shut out against Cal in the second half. If they can't score on Cal, they're not going to score on Saban. Their defense was challenged. They rose to that challenge, and they made a statement against my Vanderbilt team. They are no longer my Vanderbilt team because Nick Saban, as we've said many times in this podcast, pulled one of his classic Shang Tsungs. I think he stole Vanderbilt's soul.
You think it's over for Vanderbilt? You think Derek Mason has relinquished his soul to Nick Saban?
I have a hard time believing they're going to win more than like one game the rest of the year.
So you're off the bandwagon.
I am. I am off the bandwagon. I am fully entrenched with my boy Fromm, and I'm going to ride or die with the Bulldogs.
Well, that was a hell of a pick. So let me just say, Vandy, this is the week of the overreaction because there were a lot of very shocking totals or shocking win. What's the word I'm looking for? It's late here on the East Coast.
Margins.
Yes. A lot of teams had some shocking final scores, including Mississippi State, who ran into a very, very good Georgia defense. That line would be 3 points if they were doing it a week and a half ago. So I don't think you can overreact and think Mississippi State is done. And Auburn hasn't really looked amazing. They had an okay week last week, but I will take the points in that. And then Vandy at Florida. Florida, again, Luke Del Rio comes into the game, and all of a sudden they seem to have some life. But we've seen this story before. Florida doesn't have a quarterback. And so...
yeah.
It's impossible to take Vandy in the 10 points after what we witnessed. You know what I mean? It's like a bad breakup.
No,
we can never love again with Vandy.
But there's no way I can give 10 points to any bullshit quarterback playing in the gate for the Gators in the last 3 years.
Right.
They're all trash. So that's a tough game.
And so that game's going to be a backdoor cover one way or another. So whatever way we bet it, we'll be wrong.
That might be the under of the week, Tom, for me. That's definitely a contender. for potential under total of the week, because I think that game, I don't know who the hell is going to score in that game. That's why I feel like 10 is too many points. I mean, 42 is the over under. 42, but the spread's 10. So you're basically telling me that Florida's going to almost shut them out.
Well, I'm worried about Florida possibly having a little bit of life. It's been early in the season, and I don't want to just cast them aside just yet. So I'm going to stay away from them and assess for another week or two and decide whether Florida can put something together or whether this is a team that's just not going to have an offense all year long.
Yes, and for you real D-gens, this is a great spot if you want to have a Saturday teaser where you can tease that line up and take the under on that. Even 42.5, I feel totally confident, but if you want to tease that up, go ahead.
If you can tease Florida up to, a minus, or tease Vandy rather up to a plus 16, plus 17, I feel good about that.
Ooh, see, I would say if you're going to put another team in the teaser, I would actually go with, go like A&M at 17 or 16.5. Like, they're not going to blow out South Carolina by 17. Like, that's not going to happen.
I've sworn off teasers for the last several years, and you know, much like a recovering alcoholic, like I still get the twitch every once in a while. That'd make a good tease, and then I have to slap myself in the face and be like, "No, don't do it.
Yeah,
you've been more successful. You have a better life. You have a higher sportsbook dollar number account when you're not doing
Dan
teasers."
Dan Mullen plus 17 sounds so tempting.
It always does.
I know. Until you lose.
No teasers.
Let's talk about the big one in the SEC, Tom.
All right, so Georgia, who is a legitimate powerhouse and a threat, the front runner in the SEC East, and probably the one real threat to Alabama. They go to play against take the points non favorite coach Butch Jones. The Fire Butch campaign. So. Dan, our co-host, who is not here, has expressed to us earlier in the week that he believes after a beating that it's possible Butch Jones could be fired in the parking lot of this game. What do you think?
I completely agree. I don't see any way that this Tennessee offense can score at all on this Georgia team. There's just no way. That Georgia defense, I mean, we talked about Clemson and with Alabama being a distant two. Damn, Georgia might be a 2B then. They are insanely deep. They are incredibly fast. They looked so fast in that game. And the offense does just enough. You know, two senior running backs. They have a freshman running back who's the real, real deal too. They're turning into running back university. I think this game could get real ugly, and I think it could be very, very similar to the Mississippi State score, where it could end up getting somewhere around that like 30-0 or 31-3 range. So that's my prediction. I think Georgia really puts it on them. I think defensively they just shut them down. If you can find a prop like that, you know, maybe under Tennessee team total is a really, really good prop in this game, because there's no way they're scoring on Georgia. There's no way.
So when I look at this game, I think Georgia's clearly the better team on paper. Tennessee is at home, and they have that biggest stadium in America. And so I look for it to be close early, maybe a defensive struggle. If I'm looking at lines, maybe I'll take a look at a first half under and see what kind of total I can get there. But if I have to pick a side in this, I'm going Georgia. I'm going with the hot hand. And the two things I'd like to say, I was watching ESPN2 yesterday, and, you know, they talk about college football. They have 24 hours a day to kill, so they make up these, like, pseudo-controversies. But they were talking about Jacob Eason getting healthy. Does Georgia have a quarterback controversy? The answer is no. Like,
no.
When you're the best you've been in 10 years or maybe 20 years, go with the guy who got you to that point.
If you have a guy that went to Notre Dame and won, he's your quarterback. I don't care if Notre Dame's not the same Notre Dame. A freshman went into South Bend and won. He's your quarterback. Done.
And that's the thing. We'll talk about Notre Dame a little later, but Notre Dame beat Michigan State, an okay Michigan State team, by 20, yes, on Saturday. So maybe Notre Dame is pretty good and Georgia's just very good. I think
their defense is insane.
Things are starting to shake out. We're starting to get a glimpse of the big picture in college football, and it looks like Georgia's a top team. So
I agree.
I was wrong about Kirby Smart. I apologize. I said he was going to be, you know, lead them to 7-5, 8-4 year after year. And that's looking like a foolish prediction. However, I always said Butch Jones sucked, and I was right on about that. So 1 out of 2 ain't bad.
Not bad. Not bad, Tom. And don't worry. I'm here to pick up the slack with my Georgia SEC East champs prediction in the preseason show.
Can I say something about Butch Jones? This is a little out there, maybe especially for a college football show, but I've been reading this book called Lincoln and the Bardo by George Saunders from our hometown of Syracuse. And it's basically about people who die and they're in this purgatory state and they can't pass on until they've like absolved themselves of the sins of their former life. And I was thinking about this in relation to Butch Jones. Butch Jones should not be fired during the season. He's getting off too easy. It's too good to him to just fire him now. He needs to serve out his term and he needs to linger there and face the experience, the awfulness of what he's created. He should not be fired until not even after the bowl game. It should be like February and he should just have to wait and every week think like, is this the week? But no, it just keeps going.
That's hilarious. And that's, I would agree with you if recruiting wasn't so ridiculously important. They have to get a guy in place. They have to get the recruits. They have to get their early enrollees ready to go so they can start spring practice with a new coach and a new system. So they got to – Butch is gone. He knows.
I'm joking, of course. They're going to push him off of a catwalk into a giant vat of Jack Daniels after they lose this game by 20.
They should make him the new equipment manager and just make him wash all the – practice equipment after practice and games. That's what they should demote him down to equipment manager, assistant equipment manager.
Pay him $2 million a year and then make him do the laundry.
Heck yeah.
Can you do that? I mean, I assume he would just quit, but if you pay a head coach, you can tell them what to do, right?
Well, yes, because most likely in his contract, it says other duties as assigned.
Butch Jones, laundry boy.
That's what they do to anyone who's like an assistant athletic director. They're like, well, anything the AD doesn't want to do, or we don't have the money or staffing to do, that's what you do. I've learned the hard way in my coaching career that other duties as assigned is very common in the athletics world. So yeah, they could do it. They could do it.
The Water Boy 2 starring Butch Jones.
I love it. The Laundry Boy.
All right, let's power through some of these others.
You got it.
And then we'll get to our greatest teams of our lifetime, which is a really good one. So the Big Ten. Nebraska at Illinois. We're going to skip that game. Northwestern at Wisconsin. Wisconsin, a 14.5 point favorite.
Love Wisconsin.
Wisconsin coming off a bye. Northwestern, not a good sample size. The only tough team or even mediocre team they played was Duke. And they lost that game 41-17. They were good last week, but it was against Bowling Green, which is not a great team. The only problem here is that Wisconsin plays at Nebraska next week, which is going to be one of the two biggest games for that Big Ten West, along with the Iowa game. And so a potential look-ahead spot. But the way Wisconsin plays, handing it off to JTT and Hornibrook throwing those short passes to the tight end, I feel like this is a team that's not as susceptible to the look-ahead game.
I agree. Tom, I think this is my – I know Dan will later in the week take the points, listeners. He will post the lock of the week, trap of the week, and total of the week later in the week. He couldn't join us today, as Tom said earlier. But my personal lock of the week this week is Wisconsin. Love Wisconsin this week. I've seen that number even get a little bit lower than that. I've seen it at 14.5 or even 14, but it doesn't matter. I would take them at up to 17.5. I would take them confidently.
All right. I feel good about that one too. I think maybe a sluggish start, but by the end of the game, I feel like they can cover.
Yep.
The rest of the games, Indiana at Penn State. So I could go on for hours about the Penn State Iowa game, but in the interest of time, let's just say, let's all relax. Well, he's amazing, but let's
that's really all we need to say is Saquon.
In terms of gambling specifically, I'm going to take a week off of Penn State and just see how it goes this week. And then next week, Penn State gets Northwestern, a beat up Northwestern team that'll get pushed around this week by Wisconsin. I think there's some opportunity there potentially, but for this week, I'll stay away. Much like I will stay away Ohio State at Rutgers plus 29. Rutgers is better this year, although not good. Just too many points for a struggling JT Barrett. And then Iowa at Michigan State. Michigan State giving 3.5. Iowa has a really good defense, as we saw last week. And so I'd be tempted to take the points. I would love it if that was a little higher, say 4.5, 5. But if I'm picking a side in that game, give me the points in Iowa.
Ooh, Tom, that's the only one I'm going to disagree with you on. Because I think this is a classic bounce back game for Michigan State and a classic letdown after that really crushing defeat. You know, now they have to go on the road to a team that just got embarrassed and you know, let's be honest, potentially playing for their coach's career. So I actually like Michigan State as a very, very desperate home team this week. And so I actually like them.
All right. I will add that Michigan State and Iowa are both teams I traditionally have on what I call my no-fly list, where they're just too unreliable to bet either of them. So when push comes to shove, I'll probably stay away from this. But I want to tell you and Dan, if he listens to, if I ever try to pick against Iowa in a home setting in the future, I want you to reach through the Skype screen and just slap me. Because
only if it's a night game.
Yeah, well, yeah, a big situation.
You can go ahead and bet against them, you know, against Indiana at noon Eastern. Go ahead. But, yeah, any night game in Iowa, it's on a stay away.
Yeah, has any team ever played to the level of their competition more than a Kirk Ferentz team? My God, they looked great against Penn State. Their defense looked impressive. They got that one guy who's like 6'7", who just clogs up the middle. And then they against Iowa State, I mean, they barely even win. So I don't know what to make of this team. Fucking Iowa is what we're going to call them for the rest of the year.
Kirk Ferentz is no good. That's why.
Well, all right. He's good. He's good in certain spots. So anyway, why don't we do the Pac-12 next? Because I took most of that. So you take the Pac-12. This is your territory. Far too late for me. USC at Washington State, 4-point line. Arizona State at Stanford, Stanford giving 15.5. Washington goes to Oregon State, where they're giving 27. Colorado at UCLA giving 7. And then Cal at Oregon in a what could be a really nice game, Oregon minus 13.5. What stands out?
Washington, Oregon State stands out right away. That big number doesn't scare me. Washington's 4-0. They're just kind of rounding into form. Don't look now, but Jake Browning already has 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns. So just kind of keep that in mind. Dante Pettis is already at like 260-something yards receiving. So I really like Washington in this spot. Oregon State, as we've noted all year, stinks.
Truly awful. Maybe the worst Power 5
really,
team.
Yeah, really, really bad.
So. And Washington is the quietest of the top 10 teams, probably because of all of their night games and playing on the West Coast. It might be different for you, but for me, I don't really hear about Washington.
No, they're quiet out here, too.
But they seem to be good. I thought there'd be some sort of drop-off, but they seem right on par with last year.
Yeah, they're really good quarterbacks back. You know, they lost Ross, but Pettis is really his true number one receiver.
Sure.
You know, and they lost a bit on the defense, but that doesn't bother me against Oregon State. Oregon State sucks. So that's, to me, that's my real big play. Also, I really like Friday night's over-under. USC, Washington State, I'm seeing 65. In a lot of spots, it looked like it opened at about 64, and it's already moved up a point. So Friday night action. If you got nothing going on, that's a good, if you're out at the bar and you're actually up at that time at night, people, go ahead and tune in. That should go over. I can see that going over. So those are the two big ones that really kind of jump out at me. Stanford, they seem too inconsistent to bet on right now. I don't really have a feel for Arizona State, even though, you know, the campus is like 4 miles from my house. I just don't have a good feel for them at this season. Don't know how Colorado is going to travel. I'm tempted to go UCLA with that 7, but the back door scares me a little bit. I'm not sure how they're going to travel. And then I think you're right. The best game is going to be Cal Oregon. For me, it's a complete stay away. I have real no feel for this. I love what Cal's doing, what their coach is doing. By the way, last week, Cal's quarterback had 50 attempts in that game. That's a lot for Cal. And so, yeah, this is a stay away. I think that number is a little bit high for Oregon coming off a loss. But again, this is the bounce back like we spoke about with Michigan State, where they could come out like gangbusters. But this is definitely a game I'm super excited to watch, but I don't think I'm going to really bet it unless I do a slight nod towards the over. Tom, do you have a feel for any of these Pac-12 games at all? Anything?
No, basically since having a child, I've given up on the Pac-12, even though I think it's the most exciting conference, the most parity, and one of the most fun conferences to watch. I just can't stay up late enough to watch any of the games. So I really like Washington. Oregon State's just not good. And Washington, they're a solid top 10 team. So I'll take that one. USC Washington State is scary to me. Mike Leach could have some tricks up his sleeve, and I don't want to bet against Sam Darnold, but I'd be real scared if I were a USC fan going up there after the way they've been playing recently. And the other games, no, the lines seem about right on. Should be some exciting games to watch, but I'll stay away from betting.
All right.
Big 12, only a few games. Texas at Iowa State, 6.5-point line. Baylor at Kansas State, Kansas State minus 17. Baylor showed a little bit of life last week. And then Oklahoma State minus 10 at Texas Tech. Let me just speak on behalf of Dan, who can't join us, but texted us that he will take the over in Oklahoma State at Texas Tech, whatever it is, up to, what did he say, 116 points?
116.5 is the cutoff for him.
Yeah. So if it hits 117, then he's out. But he's before out. Then, he's in.
So he's in because right now, Tom, I'm showing this number at 81.
Right, which is a huge over-under for college football. But you can't bet the under.
No, no. After Oklahoma State's poor performance last week, they are going to be looking to put the absolute show on. They need style points so they can get back into the mix. So their game against Oklahoma has greater meaning. So they definitely want to put on a show. Texas Tech, meanwhile, don't look now. They're 3-0. They've had a couple of nice wins. They can score like crazy. Their defense is probably worse than last year's team. They gave up, I think, what, like 720,000 points? About that? 718?
12 million.
Okay, good. So that game, I love the over. Don't let that 8 scare you. That crooked number ain't shit. Take the over in that game. Baylor, Kansas State, like you said, they're frisky. Baylor.
Am I crazy to think that taking the points with Baylor might be the smart move?
No, it's not, because we still haven't seen this Baylor team travel. You know, we saw them go to Duke and push out a 2-score spread. And if, you know, if they can't cover 14 against Duke, I don't see them covering 17 against Bill Snyder. So until they prove they can travel and put on a good performance, I'm going to stay away from them and kind of lean towards Kansas State.
That's a lot of points.
It is, but Bill Snyder, that guy's a good coach. And then Texas, Iowa State, I don't give a shit.
Me neither.
It's not that good, and I don't care. Texas, wake me up when they figure things out.
We'll talk about Texas enough later in the season.
We will.
A few other games, South Florida at East Carolina, very bad this year. It's a 23.5 point line. South Florida is very good and they can score. I don't know if people know this, but they're good. That's a lot of points, so I wouldn't wager a ton, but I definitely, that would be the side I'd take in this game. They're an exciting team. Chaz Strong, how messed up is the Texas culture if this guy can succeed in Louisville, go to Texas, flame out in 3 years, and then go to South Florida and immediately have an impact? It makes you question what was going on in Texas that prevented him from succeeding. But anyway, that's something we may never know. Then UConn at Southern Methodist University and Chad Morris, 19-point line. UConn, a 19-point underdog to SMU. It seems like Chad Morris is doing.
I would lay that all day.
And that's the thing. Like, I would either lay it or stay away, but UConn just seems to hit a new low each week. And as somebody who lives 5 miles from Rensselaer Field, it saddens me. But SMU put up 36 against TCU and that great defense we saw. So I think that's got to be the play.
I agree.
Lane and Florida Atlantic host Middle Tennessee State, a challenging small conference game. Any thoughts on Lane?
Wake me up when he gets some recruits that aren't, you know, terrible. He's got nothing. That team stinks. I kind of like Middle Tennessee State. I think that they're pretty talented. I'll go with them.
I think so too. They beat Syracuse, so I think that's the pick. And then Air Force at New Mexico. New Mexico, 1-point favorite, coming off their huge win against Tulsa. If you take away the New Mexico State game, which was a rivalry game, and so it's a little bit different, New Mexico has scored 14 points, and 13 points, averaging 13.66666 with a line over it, points per game. Air Force, in their two real games, not counting the one cupcake, has scored 14 and 24. So the over-under is 50.5. The numbers say take the under. My confidence level, personally, and this is low, but that's one where leaning under seems good.
I like it, but I also love Air Force in this spot. Screw New Mexico for screwing us last week. I'm doubling down. I'm doubling up. I'm going twice as big this week on Air Force.
Air Force is definitely my pick if I'm leaning aside. Yeah, we gave one of the – well, we. Dan gave one of the greatest breakdowns we've ever had on Take the Points last week. And everything was great, and then for some reason the game was just some weird fluke, and we lost.
It was terrible.
So the lesson is never try. Miami at Ohio at Notre Dame. Notre Dame minus 23. So this is the last game we'll get to. Covers.com has this at a 73% confidence in favor of Notre Dame, which is one of the top five highest of the week. Notre Dame, I mentioned this earlier, but now that Georgia looks like one of the five best teams in the country, maybe, that Notre Dame 1-point loss looks a lot better. And then they beat Michigan State by 20 points. Meanwhile, Miami, Ohio's 2-2. They're a mediocre team. I think maybe the Irish might be the play here. Although the amount of points scares me a little.
It's a lot of points. If you have to go big and go hard with this game, I would go Notre Dame if I have to, gun to head. But it's a lot of points. It's a lot of points. But yeah, Notre Dame, they need to figure their shit out. And they need to make a statement at some point. This is a good chance for that.
Totally agree. This is a week where the lines are real tough. Vegas seems to have figured it out, at least for this week. And so I'm grasping at straws a little, but if you're looking for something to bet, this is one potential one. There's just not a lot this week that really stands out. So.
Yep. I'm going to go. But if you're going to make a play, folks, the Ryan parlay of the week, let's say I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take Clemson. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to take Georgia. I'm going to go ahead and throw Air Force into that. And then I'm also going to take the Texas Tech over. Texas Tech, Oklahoma State over 82. So that's my four-way. If you want a nice little four-way action, that's what I recommend.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with the greatest teams of our lifetime bracket, we have a fictional matchup between 2004 USC Trojans and the 2014 Ohio State Buckeyes. This is a really good one. We actually taped this already, and it went on for quite a while, and it's very extensive breakdown. So I think you're going to enjoy it. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Take the Points podcast. We are taping our greatest teams of our lifetime bracket. Just to recap quickly for those who are tuning in for the first time, this is a thing that we do where we've picked the best 16 teams from our lifetime, or at least our teenage to adult lifetime, starting in 1992. We put them in a bracket based on our rankings of who we thought was the best, the one seed through the 16. And each week we've been breaking down a different matchup. And so far we've gone through 2005 Texas versus 2016 Clemson in week one, with 2005 Texas emerging. The next week we did 1995 Nebraska, our one seed, against our 16 seed 2004 Auburn. And Nebraska won that one handily. The last 2 weeks we have done the 8-9 and the 7-10 matchup, which were 96 Florida versus 99 Florida State, and Florida State won that one. And then the 7-10 was 1993 Florida, which was upset by 2009 Alabama. So those are the four teams that have moved on so far. Today our matchup is one that seems a little more lopsided in the seeding, but might be a little bit closer than it appears. And that is the number two seed in our bracket, the 2004 USC Trojans, led by Heisman Trophy winner Matt Leiner and Reggie Bush, versus the 2014 Ohio State team, led by JT Barrett and then Cardale Jones, Ezekiel Elliott, the team that won the first ever playoff. And so I'm going to turn it over to Ryan now, who's going to break down both of these teams and give you a little flashback to who was on the teams and, you know, what these matchups will be.
All right, Tom, that was really well said. I looked at this and I said, oh, 215, this will be a lopsided affair. And the more I dug into it, the more I'm kind of like, man, this is going to be closer than I thought. So let's look at the underdog first. Let's look at 2014 Ohio State. It's a little fresher in most people's memory. Controversial that they got into the playoff that year as a four seed. And also kind of controversial they got into our bracket as well. But this team was so loaded. It was Urban Meyer's third year. So, you know, at the point now where he's, you know, brought in two classes that were completely his doing, you know, his guys, his style. He'd already put a system in, and now he's recruiting to fit his system. And to go along with him, Tom Herman, Take the Points listeners will know he is a huge favorite here at Take the Points. This is kind of where we figured out who he was, really. And started following his career the last 3 years since then. Also, defensively, two coordinators, Fickell and Ash, kind of weird. Not like Finkel and Einhorn, Fickell and Ash. They only gave up on the year only 22 points a game, which in college football is pretty ridiculous. And then you turn around and look at what they scored per game, And my God, fifth in the country at 44.8 points a game, and kind of leading that offense, eighth in the country in rushing yards per game, 264.5 a game. That's just rushing. And that was led by Ezekiel Elliott. This was kind of his breakout season, kind of where the crop top legend started. He ran for 1,878 yards and 18 touchdowns in his sophomore year.
Whew. He was certainly one of the greats, and even a few years out, we can look back and sort of place him within history.
Oh yes, he was definitely they could have fed him even more, as people will remember every time he got a first down and stood up. He asked to be fed, just like he does now with the Cowboys.
And they did feed him more at the end of the year, which we'll get to, but there were a few changes that Ohio State made around the last few games of the year when they really started to take off, and one of them was giving him the ball a lot more.
They did, Tom, and that's because their freshman phenom quarterback, JT Barrett, ended up getting hurt, which led to the third string Cardale Jones emergence in the playoff. But let's back up real quick to JT Barrett. Tom, we've had some really kind of fun conversations at his expense this season so far, and but this is kind of the reason we have those jokes about him, is because he was so impressive and so calm and unflappable as a freshman. It was, you know, you look back now and you're like, wow, man, he was a freshman that year. And you're like, he looked so calm in some of those big games. And then you watch him now and you're like, he looks so rattled. And I'm not really sure why. I mean, he was a third team All-American as a true freshman. And that's insane.
Yeah, he was really special. So for those who haven't listened on a frequent basis, we have this thing we call the Zach Mills Award, named after famed or not quite famed Penn State quarterback Zach Mills from the early 2000s. And Zach Mills, among his many other talents, such as poker playing, was most well known among Penn State fans for being amazing his freshman year and getting just a little bit progressively worse each year. And so we've named an award after him. It seems like there's one quarterback like this each year who starts off their freshman year amazing and gets a little bit worse each year. And then you look at them their senior year and you wonder, how can this be the same guy? And so JT Barrett's a front runner for that this year, although there are other contenders, Anu Solomon, who has just recently been benched at Baylor. So,
yep.
That's beside the point. Barrett was great that year, which I think was the point we're trying to make.
Absolutely. And Tom, we'll kind of wrap up real quick. Just a few of these, a few names that I was kind of going through as I'm looking through the depth chart of just the freshmen and sophomores from that team, because it was just so impressive. I mean, you have guys like Eli Apple, first round pick of the Giants, Raekwon McMillan, stud linebacker. He's in the NFL. Darren Lee, another first-round pick with the New York Jets. He's starting, and he's really good. And then that's not even mentioning Michael Bennett, who was a third-team All-American as a freshman, D-lineman. And then sophomore Joey Bosa with his breakout season as well, 13.5 sacks. And he wasn't playing many fourth quarters that season as well. So and he's only a sophomore. They're rotating guys like crazy. So just a really impressive team once you kind of go back and look, and now you see that those guys that were contributing as freshmen and sophomores, now you're all of a sudden you're recognizing their names as NFL, you know, first round picks and really, really high picks. So it was a pretty impressive team. They had a great run, started the year really in a bad spot, losing their second game of the season against Virginia Tech. But then ever since then, they just progressively got better and better and better. You know, that's what's going to happen when you have a freshman quarterback, you know, in a young team. You're just going to continue to get better and better. And they did. And a couple breaks went their way. But when it was time for them to put their foot down on someone's throat, my God, that Big Ten championship game, Tom. Holy Lord, was that a beatdown. That was just a thumping that I don't think anybody saw coming. 59-0.
Against a pretty decent Wisconsin team. Not the greatest Wisconsin team, but I think they were ranked top 15, top 13, something like that. They were an okay team. So I would like to talk about something we do each week, which is sort of going through the season. And while we're on Ohio State, let's just talk about their season, and then we'll move and talk about everything with regards to USC. But you mentioned they lost to Virginia Tech in week two. They lost 35-21. It wasn't a close or last second game. It was fairly decisive. They also nearly lost to unranked Penn State. It took overtime for them to win that game 31-24. And this is not the Penn State team now that we think of with Saquon and McSorley. This was a bad Penn State team under sanctions, missing players, missing their linebackers. I mean, they should not have been in OT with that team.
So, no, but that was a road game, a night game, a rivalry game. You know, that was a pretty, that was Penn State's whole season was that game.
Sure. And I'm not saying that Ohio State's terrible for being close, but when you think about championship teams and teams that are in the top 15 of our lifetime, that's not the kind of thing that you picture happening. So what changed, I think, is the big story of this season. A team that lost to Virginia Tech, nearly lost to Penn State. Well, you mentioned the youth. This was a very young team, one of the most inexperienced teams that season, but a team that had two really good Urban Meyer recruiting classes. And those classes included the freshman quarterback, JT Barrett, who had his breakout game November 8th. This, to me, was the turning point of the season. This was a nationally televised game on ABC. They were playing number 7 Michigan State, an away game in East Lansing, and they won 49-37. Now, a lot of people thought that they might lose this game, but JT Barrett had the game of his career, definitely up to that point, and maybe his total career. I don't know.
I'm not close.
Well, I've only researched this season for today, so I would have to really think about other seasons, but one of the best games of his career. That win took them from number 13 to number 8. And that's when people started to look at this team and say, hey, you know what? This is a team that can win the Big Ten and compete for a playoff spot. I think people had written them off early in the season. And so the team started to coalesce. The sophomores and freshmen started to play well. As we mentioned, Ezekiel Elliott got a lot more carries and became just more of a workhorse and took on a bigger role. The offensive line started playing amazing. This is a team with a great offensive line who protected their quarterbacks. And we saw that later when JT Barrett went down against Michigan, when they beat Michigan 42-28. They jumped to a 5th in the ranking, but without their star quarterback who finished 3rd in the Heisman rankings, everybody assumed that they're done. This is going to be the team that just misses the playoff and a nice season. They'll be better back next year. Cardale Jones comes in, and you mentioned that Wisconsin absolute beatdown. And so that led us to a real tough spot. I'm sure most people remember this, but if somebody's listening to this 10 years in the future, this was just, it was the first year of the playoff, and it couldn't have worked out worse for the committee because you had Alabama, you had Oregon, you had Florida State, pretty clear 1, 2, and 3. And then in 4th, 5th, 6th, you had to choose between one loss Ohio State, who just beat Wisconsin 59-0, a one loss Baylor, which was the height of the Baylor teams, and a one loss TCU, which had a great defense and a great offense and was just an all around solid team. So they picked Ohio State. It was very controversial. A lot of people thought that one of the Big 12 teams should get in, that Ohio State losing to Virginia Tech was, I mean, this isn't an opinion. This is true. Ohio State's loss to Virginia Tech was probably the worst loss of any of those teams that year. But they made it in nevertheless because of their great play against Wisconsin and the way they turned it on later in the year. And some would argue because of the size of the program and the money behind it. But that was the cynical take on it, at least before the games were played. So Baylor lost its bowl game, so that was easy. They're out of the conversation. However, TCU, if you'll recall, they dominated Ole Miss in, I believe it was the Peach Bowl, maybe. And this happened before any of the playoff games. I think they won 42-3. So people now are like, holy shit, TCU should have been in this playoff game, not this Ohio State game. You know, this team that lost to Virginia Tech, they made a huge mistake. Then came the Sugar Bowl. And Ohio State came out, and with Cardale Jones, nobody knew what was going to happen. They pulled off a huge upset against the number one seed Alabama, the team that everybody just assumed that would win that year. Blake Sims at quarterback, good running backs, great defense, your typical Alabama team. And Ohio State just they hung with them. They were down early. They fought back, and it was just a very solid, impressive win. And then they played Oregon, the Mariota team, and they just physically dominated that team and won easily in the national championship game. So it was a story of a team growing up before our eyes, I think. And really, in hindsight, when you look at all the players on that team, God, they're just incredible. We talked last week about 09 Alabama, who was a little bit under the radar by Nick Saban standards because they were the first team to win. But when you look back at all the players on that roster, how amazing they were, you realize, oh, they were one of the great teams of the decade. And I feel the same way about this Ohio State team. When you look back, you look at everybody on that roster who you named, this team is truly incredible. And so we mentioned all of the highlights. Braxton Miller, we forgot to mention, who was going to be the starting quarterback and then had his injury, which had JT Barrett play. And then Barrett got injured, and that's when Cardell, the third stringer, became the national championship game winner. But the one highlight and the one great highlight that we must mention whenever we talk about this Ohio State team is Mr. Cardell Jones with one of the greatest Twitter posts of all time. Would you like to say it or shall I?
Oh, Tom, it is a good one. Even though he recently rectified it, it is one of the great quotes of all time.
And I will say, before you say it, I have many friends who went to Ohio State, and they insist that Cardell is a very smart player and that he was being facetious.
I ain't here to play school or to play class.
That's right.
Which one was it? Class, right? I ain't here to play class.
Oh, you know what? I should know the exact wording. You know what? I'm pausing this. Ryan, I want you to look up the exact quote right now, and then we'll start retaping.
Oh, boy. I can pull it up while we go, because there's actually one thing, Tom, I want to talk. The last thing I want to mention about this Ohio State team is kind of the break they caught at the end with what we talked about, them being the first iteration of an Urban Meyer recruiting vision. Is unlike most other Big Ten teams, they were kind of one of the first to break the mold from the big power plotting teams to just going out and getting pure speed. And if you look and you see the Big Ten championship game in the Colts Dome, first playoff game against Alabama, where was that? That was in a dome in New Orleans. Was the national championship game? Jerry's World in a dome. So they got three consecutive dome games at the end of the year that really allowed that speed to distinguish itself and to allow them, to really do that. So, that was kind of one thing when I was looking through the season recaps and kind of researching. I'm like, dome, dome, dome. Ah, okay. They caught a break there. Their speed kept them in those games because they didn't have, the monsters that Alabama had, but they had some speed, and that dome environment allowed them to take advantage of that.
You know what, though? It's a fair point, a great point, that they changed the mold of the slow, stagnant, physical but boring Big Ten school. I haven't really thought about this before, but maybe they deserve a lot of credit. Urban Meyer does, because now we're in an era where Penn State's scoring 56 points in games, not last week, but in a lot of their games, they're scoring 40s, 50s, huge numbers. Michigan under Harbaugh, they're struggling a little this year, but last year they put up some points. The Big Ten is changing, and I think that started with this team.
It did. It started with, "We ain't come here to play school."
So I've got the full quote, and I apologize to all the listeners. I feel like I've let you all down as a college football fan. I should know this by heart. But the exact quote, "Why should we have to go to class if we come here to play football?" Capitalized football. "We ain't come to play," all caps, "school." "Classes are," all caps, "pointless."
Heck yeah. Guess what, though? He went back. He got the degree. And he put that quote on the top of his graduation cap. So good for him. he went back and got the job done. He also poked a little fun at himself in the process, and good for national champion Cardale Jones.
Here is a follow-up tweet from April 2nd, 2015. This is a throwback Thursday. It says, "Still can't believe I tweeted something as stupid as this, but hey, we live and learn. After your religion, family, faith and family, nothing is more important than education. Hashtag student before athlete. Book emoji, football emoji."
Fair enough. Okay. Well, with that
maybe Cardale
said,
is pretty smart. Maybe we underestimated him, but I will never forget that great quote.
That was awesome. All right, let's move it along here, Tom. We spent a little bit too much time on that 15 seed. Let's talk about the number 2 seed, the 2004 USC Trojans. Tom, earlier this in this segment, earlier this season in this segment, we talked about the 99 Florida State team being the first ever wire-to-wire champions.
That's right.
Here is the second ever wire-to-wire champions, the USC Trojans. So let's just get this out of the way right now. NCAA has vacated this. I haven't. AP has also not vacated this. They don't buy that NCAA bullshit. So neither do we.
We've talked about this many times on the podcast. We do not vacate wins, or we don't recognize that here on this podcast. You played the game with the players on the field. You won the game. You know, you can face sanctions later on, but the teams that met up on the field were the teams that played, and you can't just erase history like that. So it happened.
It did. Okay. Anyways, moving along, let's talk about some of these players. Pretty easy to remember a lot of these guys, but some of these, you know, if we have millennial listeners, one, thanks for listening. Two, here's a little recap. Matt Leinart, Heisman Trophy winner.
Yes, Fox Sports analyst Matt Leinart was once quite a good football player.
That's right. Fox Sports' answer to Jesse Palmer's tight shirts is Matt Leinart. Heisman Trophy winner, and let's kind of be honest here, he was pretty close to a wire-to-wire Heisman Trophy winner, too.
That's right.
You know, we all kind of had that feeling, you know, all year everyone kind of assumed he was going to be the guy. But also on that team, finishing fifth in the Heisman voting, which is like unheard of that teammates didn't poach votes from each other, was sophomore Reggie Bush. So Reggie Bush, who was also not even a starting running back on that team, that went to my boy, Lendale White. Love Lendale. Shout out Lendale. He's got a podcast now, too.
Does he? I'm not familiar with that.
Following Lendale on Twitter, because he has some good stuff going on. He's a good dude. He's in Denver.
We'll have to get him on the show. Yeah, Lendale, people forget Lendale had 1,103 yards to Bush's 908. So he actually was the leading rusher by nearly 200 yards, even though Bush was the kind of sizzle guy. Lendale White was more of the power back, and together they were just an awesome combination.
They were the ultimate college thunder and lightning.
I was going out of my way not to mention the thunder and lightning.
Oh, I'm going to, because you know what? I'm not a Giants fan. I love rubbing it in their faces. Screw them.
So a couple great receivers too.
Unbelievable talent at receiver and depth at receiver. Now keep in mind that Mike Williams was deemed ineligible when the season started. So they had the number one guy and he did not play. So we had sophomore Steve Smith, the other
Steve Smith. That's
not
right.
Steve Smith Sr., Steve Smith, who went to the Giants. Dwayne Jarrett, freshman. Ridiculous. Tall, so, lanky, yeah. Randy Moss type body. He was insane. He was so good.
So this is a situation we talk about this a lot on the show, and it's one thing that makes me love college football. There are a lot of situations where I think the parallel is Peter Warrick and Lavernius Coles, who we talked about on Florida State a couple weeks back when we did the 99 team. But you have the guy who goes and has a pretty good NFL career. That's Steve Smith. And then Dwayne Jarrett, by my recollection, not quite as successful in the NFL, but he's the guy we remember from college. He just made these amazing downfield catches, and he could really stretch the field. And I just remember Dwayne Jarrett really being the guy that was amazing to watch. Not that Steve Smith was any slouch by any stretch of the imagination.
No, he was more of the possession guy, the third down guy, just the sure hands. But also on that team, they had three tight ends that made it to the NFL. And that season, two tight ends that got all Pac-12 honors.
Mm-hmm.
Two. They only take, I think, three tight ends in the whole league to make all Pac-12. And they had two of them.
Much like we just talked about, Dominique Bird was really the guy to watch for the
freshman
plays.
Breakout star, Fred Davis.
That's right.
The best
that's
pro
right.
Career out of all of them.
So he had the best pro career. But then Dominique Bird was really the guy on this team when you needed a third and short, even a fourth down. People who watched that Texas National Championship game in 2005 will remember before Reggie Bush or Lendale White was stopped on that fourth down. They had another important fourth down where Leinart rolled out and passed to Dominique Bird, which was a play they used to run all the time to great success. So he was really the guy in college, even though the other guys may have had more successful pro careers.
Absolutely. And it always threw teams off as much as they prepare and get ready for it. It always threw teams off having a left-handed quarterback. You know, Leinart was very non-traditional like that. So and me being left-handed myself, Tom, I've always been a huge Leinart fan. He also wore my favorite number, 11. So big fan of Matt Leinart in college.
You'll be happy to know, Ryan, that it's way too early to tell, but my daughter is she just turned one, and she's exhibiting signs that she may be a lefty. Whenever she picks up balls that come with her toys, she chucks them with her left hand under the couch. So maybe I'll get her a Matt Leinart jersey.
Oh, yeah. Bring it on. Love the lefties. Mark Brunell, too. Okay. Real quick. Let's get back to USC. So Leinart, Heisman. One other thing I want to kind of mention, how ridiculous this team was. Even their kicker that season ended up breaking the USC career scoring record. Like, that just shows you that over this whole period of time, how good USC was in those years and just how dominant they were at every single position. I mean, even their kicker was breaking all these records. It's pretty ridiculous. So let's talk about some of the season. We'll get to the defense a little bit more as we go. Guys like Cedric Ellis and Sean Cody and Frosty Rucker, Lawrence Jackson, like these guys were just insane on the D-line. They had so many guys.
Matt Grudegode, I can't pronounce the guy's name, but he was a team captain, a guy that a lot of people forget about from that team. And so he had a great impact.
Senior linebacker. He was awesome.
And of course, Lofa Tatupu.
Yep. They were loaded. I mean, they were super loaded and, they were so talented. So let's talk a little bit about how that season went. So they opened the year at a quote unquote neutral site game, which was not a neutral site game. It was at the Washington Redskins Stadium against Virginia Tech, which is like right up the street. It's like an hour and a half away.
Right.
And they went and they smacked around VaTech, a really good VaTech team, a VaTech team that at that time was unranked, but by the end of the season, they were like the ninth ranked team in the Sugar Bowl. So they were legit. Then after that, they had a couple of cupcakes, 49-0, 42-10, Stanford, not a problem. Then let's talk about October 9th, Tom. They played a game against number 7, Cal Berkeley.
That's right. People might forget, but there was a time when California was quite a good football team, although they're having a mild resurgence this year.
They are. We're going to get to that. We already talked about that. But number seven, Cal, led by Aaron Rodgers.
That's
so this
right.
this game was absurd. Aaron Rodgers opened the game with 23 consecutive completions. 23 consecutive completions. And USC, you know, hung on. They came back from behind and they won that game 23-17. And then turned around the following week and had another home game against a top 15 team in Arizona State. And they put the smack down. And I think that was the time, the turning point, when they won that close game with Rodgers. They kind of regrouped. They stayed at home. Having those three straight home games was huge for them. And they put it down after that, 45-7 over the 15th ranked team in the country. And then after that, their scores got pretty ridiculous. 38-0, 42-12, 49-9 against Arizona. And then November 27th, the rivalry game with Brady Quinn and that highly ranked Notre Dame team. And they massacred him 41-10, and it wasn't even that close. It was so bad, their domination of Notre Dame, that 3 days later, Notre Dame fired their coach because it was a third consecutive 31-plus point loss to USC. And we talk about Nick Saban being the ultimate Shang Tsung, where he takes your soul. Well, Pete Carroll still has Ty Willingham's soul in his office because he took it there.
USC, this USC team, all of us remember, as it wasn't that long ago, but if our younger listeners don't, this was the precursor dynasty to the current Alabama dynasty. And you could argue, you know, Florida had a few years in there, but this was really the last team before Alabama that seemed to just take people's souls and crush everyone and seemed unbeatable until they finally were.
Yes, sir. So they roll through the season. They get to the national championship game, January 4th, 2005. Tom, I remember where I was during this game. Do you remember where you were?
I do remember where I was. I was at my friend Jay's house in Windsor Locks, Connecticut. I was visiting him on a break from college. He was my college roommate, but we were on winter break. But I had gone down there, I think, for New Year's, and I think I stayed in Connecticut for a few days. But I was at his house after mini golfing, and it was just such a dominating performance that we stopped watching very, into the third quarter, maybe, pretty early.
All right. Good for you.
How about you?
Well, Tom, my recollection of this game is quite funny and very relevant to this podcast in particular. I was in grad school at the time, living way up on the Canadian border.
Wait, hang on. This wasn't during our college years. So no, I was just visiting my friend Jay. This was when I lived in Southern Connecticut and he was still in Northern Connecticut. I just want to get that on the record. Did not go to college for like 7 years.
I did. It was four undergrad and then three grad. But anyways, I was in grad school, and in my tiny little town of grad school, there was really only one bar that employees of the school could go to. Everything else was a college bar. There's two colleges in this town, so there's very limited choices. We only had one bar. So I'm at that bar. This was back in my heyday, Tom. So I was still eating meat back then.
Mm-hmm.
I was still, boozing it up pretty hard.
Yep.
So I got there early, got a whole bunch of wings, whole bunch of fried mushrooms, all sorts of shit, and just started getting drunk. And the townies start rolling in, and I start getting drunker and drunker. And then all of a sudden, at this little college town, there's a lot of, let's call them good old boys, right? And these good old boys, they love Oklahoma. Love Oklahoma.
Do they? Bob's. I mean, this is way upstate New York. You're not out in the Midwest.
No, they're basically rednecks. And redneck is redneck is redneck. They hate California. They hate LA. Those pretty boys.
Oh, so they're relative Oklahoma fans just because they're playing USC.
Correct. Gotcha. Correct. They hate LA, so they're gonna go with the Hicks.
Sure, that they're makes like, oh, we're perfect Hicks. Sense. They're Hicks, now.
Great. Right. So they were loving it. Bob Stoops, Oklahoma. Jason White won the Heisman the year before. You know, Leinart's gonna steal his Heisman this year. No way. Back to back. And in those days, Tom, you'll remember fondly, I had a bit of a problem with not running my mouth. So of course I start running my mouth to these guys about USC. Next thing you know, everyone's got wallets out. The owner of the bar is out organizing this, and everyone just starts piling money on the bar. Not close to sanctioned. We're going to go ahead and overlook that. And all these guys just keep going, 20 on Oklahoma, 50 on Oklahoma, 100 on Oklahoma. I was like, I will cover all your bets. I'll take all of them. I'll give you points. What do you want? I remember telling one guy, I'll give him anything up to 3 touchdowns.
Wow. Bold move. I gave
him 20 points for $50. I gave him 20 points. Well, that final was 55-19. And it wasn't even that close.
No, absolute domination. So
slaughter.
So we talked about a few weeks ago the 95 Nebraska team that was, I said it was the most dominating championship game in our lifetime. I believe this was second.
Correct. I would agree. This was...
There are a couple games...
2A, 2B. There's 2A, 2B.
For yeah, me. There's a LSU and Florida teams that crushed Ohio State teams, which... As a Penn State fan, was even, fun to
no,
watch.
No, I was thinking the Alabama-Notre Dame.
Yeah, I mean, I would have that in the top five for sure. My top five would be 95 Nebraska, this team, the two Ohio State teams that lost to SEC squads, and then that Alabama-Notre Dame game. But I think this was much more of a domination than the Bama-Notre Dame. Just because yes. of the way that USC plays versus the way Alabama plays.
And the fact that you had the 03 Heisman Trophy winner going against the just recently crowned 04 Heisman Trophy winner. So that was, you know, two primetime offenses. And let's not forget, not only did they have the Heisman Trophy winner at quarterback, Oklahoma, they had Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, in his I believe that was his freshman year, which was probably his best college year statistically.
This was the year he finished second to Leinart in the Heisman voting. Yeah. So Adrian Peterson at the prime of his college peak powers.
So we had two teams that each had two guys who were, you know, Heisman, top five, top ten. Yeah.
Yep.
And USC dominated the game as if they were playing a JV team.
Yes. So let's talk about that. So we got the two champions. Let's set a point spread, Tom. Let's talk about this.
Well, I want to say one more thing before we do that. So we talked about Ohio State was a story about a team emerging and growing up throughout a season. This was the opposite. This was a story of utter and complete domination. USC's 2004 motto was "Leave no doubt."
That's right, leave no doubt. And
that is because, for those who don't remember, in 2003 they were a split national champion with the Nick Saban LSU team, and so they wanted this year.
Urban Meyer's Utah team. They also went undefeated that year.
They went undefeated, but I don't believe they were part of the national championship.
No, but
at least not because there was BCS, which was LSU, and AP, which was USC. And when the BCS in that era, the AP was considered the lesser poll. So USC won the quote unquote lesser national championship that year. Most people called it a split, but the real one, the BCS one, that went to LSU. So they felt a little slighted going into 2004. And that's when they had the Leave No Doubt motto, which was to dominate people and win this one single-handedly and not split, basically. And so they did it. As you said, second team to go wire to wire, number one. they just crushed teams. They played a good Pac-12 schedule, even though they only played two ranked teams before the bowl game. It was a solid schedule. 98-yard rushing differential, 71.8-yard passing differential. So they're outgaining teams by 160, 170 yards a game. Six All-Americans. Six. That's a lot. And then the AP would later go on to name them the best team of the BCS era. 32 voters from the AP voted on that, and they were named the number one team of the entire BCS era, beating out 01 Miami and Vince Young Texas, which are also in our bracket. So we'll see if we agree. And then ESPN called them the best team of the 00 decade.
Fair enough.
This is a team that is just remembered for utter domination. So they face off against the 14 Ohio State team that we've already said is criminally underrated in hindsight. So break it down for me, Ryan. What kind of line are you putting on this game?
Whew, I thought about this, and it's a tough one. It's a tough one because I want to go and make sure that I'm setting this line the way Vegas would set this line. So I want equal action on both sides.
And I agree. This is not about, well, all lines are about equal money on both sides, not about what they actually think the point spread will be. In many cases, it ends up being the same thing. But I do think this is a situation where it would be a little more inflated on USC's side.
Yes, absolutely.
Because of the way they're remembered.
Absolutely. So that's why initially I was like, whew, do I go with like 7.5? And then I was like, ooh, I don't know. That might be too many points. Is a touchdown just too easy of a number, a push? Do I really get clever and go 6.5 or even 4.5? So I've really struggled with this, and I've thought about this a bunch. And every time I just keep coming back to, you know, that USC defense was so opportunistic, and they just – Ohio State was so young that I don't think that the back doors would scare as many people off, and I'm going to make this 7 even.
Oh, wow. It's interesting you struggled because I felt really good about this line, and I had a number – right off the bat, which you actually have named already. And I felt good about it the last couple days. And my number was 7.5. As you say, the half point respect. Again, best team of the BCS era, as voted by AP voters, people who know what they're talking about. Best team of the decade, as voted by ESPN. Nobody's going to rank 2014 Ohio State the best team of this decade.
No, not at all.
Even though, and we'll talk about this in a minute, we think that they match up well. I think when you're placing a line, this is clearly in favor of USC, and that's why half point respect, as you would say, 7.5.
I like it. I'll go with it.
So you go first. Who wins? What kind of matchups do we look for? And how does the game play out?
Well, I think this is definitely going to be a high-scoring game. That's for sure. I mean, the over-under on this game has got to be, whew, God, I would put it at like 72.5. I think this is a high-scoring game. I think that anytime you get a shootout that could come down to a couple of decisions, you have to trust the veteran Heisman Trophy winner over the whether you want to say Barrett is healthy in a perfect scenario, or you want to call it Cardale because he was the one that won the title. It doesn't matter. Those are all inexperienced guys that at some point they were going to push too hard, trying to outscore USC. So I think for me, I would go lean towards USC. I not by a ton, but I would say for me, 42-28. USC 42-28, and that still gives us that backdoor to break our hearts.
Oh wow! So you've got a more a wider margin of victory than I would. I would. So I'll just spoil it right away. I will pick USC, the best team of the decade, to beat. You know what I think was a team that was pretty good in hindsight, but did have to sort of squeak into the playoff and pull an upset or two to win. The reason I think Ohio State matches up very well against USC is because they possess a lot of the same qualities as the 05 Texas team that did beat them. And so I'm going with Cardale Jones at quarterback because he was the quarterback who played in the championship game. And I think he's the better matchup because, as you said, the USC D was opportunistic. They can move around. It's tough because Cardale gave you a big guy that was tough to bring down in the pocket, whereas JT gave you the running ability and ability to get out of the pocket. Vince Young beat them because he had both. And so I think that's the problem. That's where they fall short of an 05 Texas, even though they have a similar offensive line. They have an even better running back, and they have the stout defense. They didn't have that same kind of double threat quarterback. JT Barrett, as we've seen now, not the greatest passer, especially against elite defenses. Even though he was very good that year, I have to think against 2004 USC defense, he's not going to play the same way he did against, you know, number 7 Michigan State of 2014. So Cardale's the guy because he'll be a little tougher to bring down, and he'll be able to make plays and move the ball, and he'll be able to hand off to Zeke. But at the end of the day, if they're able to contain Zeke and they can load the box, I don't see how either of these quarterbacks can just make enough plays to beat that defense. Whereas USC has so many playmakers that even against a very, very good Ohio State defense, they still had some young guys, and they're going to make mistakes from time to time, even though they got better at the end of the year. And a guy like Matt Leiner, Reggie Bush, Lendale, Jarrett, all those guys, you've just got too many weapons to contain, even for a great defense. So my prediction is this is USC Texas without the final Vince Young touchdown run. So give me USC and a 3-4 point victory in the end.
All right.
38-35.
I like it. I like it. Good analysis.
Anything else you want to add?
No, that was fun, man. That was we went real deep on
it. I mean, we've only talked about this for an hour, so we might as well just keep going and make this a 7-hour podcast.
Yeah, I think we're good. I think we're good. I'm excited for next week. I think next week, Tom, we're going to go with 2012 Alabama against the 94 Penn State Nittany Lions, Tom. We're going to do it. We got to do it, the 5-12 matchup. I'm excited. I want to get the listeners excited.
This one's going to be brutal for me because Penn State 94 is my favorite team of all time. And Alabama 2012 is, in my opinion, the best Alabama team, which is the best dynasty of our lifetime. So that's going to be a real, real tough one. And they're teams with such opposite strengths. So
it'll be fun.
Looking forward to that. Oh, you know what we forgot to mention just very quickly? We talked about the coaching, but the D-line coaches on these two teams. On Ohio State, you have Larry Johnson, who was dismissed from Penn State after the incident, goes over and wins a ring as D-line coach of Ohio State, the ultimate FU move to the Penn State administration. And then you think that's good. Well, who's the D-line coach of this USC team? Well, it's Take the Points favorite, Ed Orgeron.
Oh, yeah.
Before players were touching the rope. And another Take the Points favorite, I don't think we mentioned, offensive coordinator Norm Chow.
Norm Chow, the ultimate video game offensive coordinator. He just called games like we were playing Madden growing up. It was awesome.
These
ran fun stuff.
These are one thing that's amazing when you look back at all these games, not just this week, but the ones we've done previously, the coaches. And not just the head coaches, but all these staffs, these guys go on to great careers. It's not just Heisman Trophy winners and Reggie Bushes. It's all these guys in the trenches and in the coaching, in the locker room and all that stuff. So
that's right. Coach O, recruiting coordinator Coach O, left after the national championship game to become the head coach at Ole Miss.
All right. So on that note, that unfortunately is all the time we have. Of course, it's all the time we have because, as usual, we've gone on forever. But that's it. We're out of time. Ryan, any parting shots you would like to add?
No, it was an extensive breakdown, Tom. It was awesome. I'm really getting into this bracket, and I hope the listeners are too, and I'm excited to can keep that going. So keep betting, keep looking for our Take the Points picks on covers.com, and keep commenting.
All right. Curb Your Enthusiasm this Sunday. I'm very excited.
Yes, sir.
All right, people. TakethePoints.net, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. And if you come over to our house, we'll just yell the podcast into your ear. So you can get it in all sorts of forms. Thank you all for listening, and we'll be back next week. Take care. Take the point.